I went to the, I think it was the corrections dinner, steak dinner over in Kentucky. I was probably like, I don't know, 50 days sober maybe. And like, it was like the most people I'd been around at one time in a long time. And Carlos was at our table, and he heard my last name. He came over. He's like, "Hey, what clan are you from?" Found out we weren't related. But ever since, man, every time I see Carlos, he's always smiling, man. He's always smiling. Even with rough times, you know, he's still a happy guy. And that's, you know, that gives me a lot of inspiration. For all the years he's been around, and you know, shows the program working. So I'd like to hear how he did it. Carlo.
My name's Carlo Titch. I'm a real alcoholic. My sobriety date's August 23rd, 1986, and don't do nothing for you, it tickles the shit out of me. It's been a rough couple weeks, really. My niece had a baby, and about six days after she had the baby, she died. Not the baby, but my niece, and it's been pretty rough. I mean, it really sucks, especially this time of year. Anyway, the big book tells me to tell in a general way what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. Buddy Joe's here to keep me honest. Me and Joe were in and out of the same jails. Know a lot of the same people, but we was never in there at the same time. You know? I think by the time I was getting put in, he was getting out or getting shipped down somewhere, you know. But anyway, in a general way, what I was like. I ran away from home the first time I was 3 years old. I made it 2 houses down the street. I took my older sister with me. It was in June, and I made her take a coat in case we got cold. When I was 10, I ran away from home, stayed gone for 2 weeks, you know, and I was thinking about that the other day. I remember sleeping in a culvert under the road, thinking when it got dark, I remember thinking, man, it's cold. This might not have been a good idea. I'll go home in the morning. Sun comes out and warms up. Well, when the sun come out and it warmed up, there was no sense in going home, you know. So last night I found myself in that culvert, you know. When I was 12, I ran away and joined the circus, not the carnival, but the circus. Made it to somewhere up in Michigan, I forget where it was now. Before they realized I wasn't supposed to be there, so they shipped me back. I come from a large family. I had 5 sisters and 3 brothers. When I was 6 years old, my dad left. I guess he didn't want all them kids, but anyway, after he left, well, I pretty much did what I wanted to before that, you know. I talked to my mom after I got sober about that, and she said that we moved around a lot too, but she said that, you know, I always run away when I wasn't getting what I wanted. Wasn't getting my way. I asked her why we moved around a lot, and she said it was to keep you from getting sent away. And I wasn't really a bad kid. I didn't want to go to school, you know. But I remember being out with guys, and if they was going to destroy something, I'd leave, you know. That's all right. I don't need that shit. I was with them one time. We knocked the schoolhouse windows out. And Mom had to pay for the windows, and I had to go all summer with the old pair of shoes that I had because she didn't have money to buy me a pair of shoes. And I never do talk much about my mom, but she did a hell of a job raising 9 kids by herself. You know, a hell of a job. None of us ended up in the penitentiary. Pretty close, you know, but, you know, I got a tattoo on my arm when Merle Haggard died that says, "Mama tried." And every time that song would come on the radio, she'd either look at me and she'd say, "That could be you." I'm like, "I'm too smart for that." But I always did what I wanted to do. I quit school when I was 16. Got a job working for a guy in a gas station. But before that, I worked for a guy. I grew up watching TV, you know. And I thought that's what life was supposed to be, you know. John Wayne, he'd walk into a saloon, take a drink, hit somebody. You know what I mean? You know, I watched Cowboys, John Wayne, Randolph Scott, and I still watch them old Cowboys today. Joe drives Joe King crazy. He comes in the room, he says, you know, they got new Westerns. Yeah, but I like these old ones, you know. but I always wanted to be a cowboy. You know, that was my thing. I was going to be a cowboy. And in junior high school, I got a job working for this guy breaking horses, and I was pretty good at it. And, you know, I did that for a while. And I liked it because I didn't have to deal with people. Mm. See, that was the thing. I didn't like people. I didn't like dealing with people. All them brothers and sisters, I'd stay up at night and read while they were sleeping because nobody bothered me, you know, and I'd read everything. You know, I'd be sitting somewhere and get bored, I'd read a damn matchbook, you know. And thank God for the nuns in the Catholic school that I learned how to read. You know, but anyway, when I was 16, I quit school, got a job in Newport, Kentucky. Working at a gas station, gas was 26.9 cents a gallon. Pumped a lot of self-service in, you know. But anyway, this guy was going around robbing the gas stations. They would find the attendant shot in the back of the head. So I told my boss and my buddies, I said, yeah, the guy comes in to rob me, I'm going to throw some Bruce Lee on him. Green Hornet. So anyway, one night, this guy, I worked from 7 in the morning to 11 at night. That was my shift. And this guy didn't show up for third shift one night, so I had to work it. And I'm inside, and this guy comes in, and he said, I was in here earlier, and I remembered him being in there. He said, I got a pack of cigarettes. He said, I dropped a matchbook with a $50 bill in it. Well, I look around like this on the floor, and when I turn around, he's got a gun. He says, get in the back room. So I went in the back room. He said, get on your knees with your back to me. So I got on my knees with my back to it. He said, how you open that cash register? I said, here's the money. And he took the money, said, now lean your head forward. And I did, and I peed my pants. Mm. You know? That was my big secret when I got here. Nobody was ever going to know about it. I waited, nothing happened. I looked around, the guy was gone. So I got up, I changed my pants, and then called the cops. But that was my big secret. I was a 16-year-old kid, fresh off the farm. I thought I was going to die, and I peed my pants. Well, anyway, I started drinking not too long after that. And I'll tell you this, alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I've had guns pulled on me after I started drinking. I've been shot at, stabbed, cut. And I never peed my pants. the girls scared me to death. The prettier they were, the more I scared of them. You know? I remember, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, me and my uncle were at a demolition derby, and these young girls walked by, and I said, damn, I wish I knew back when I was their age what I know now. He said, we'd have still been scared of them. Probably. But you know, alcohol, when I was drinking, it didn't matter how pretty they were. I'd stagger up and ask them if they wanted to dance, you know. Didn't bother me, you know. Alcohol took away all that stuff. For a long time, I got my first DUI when I was 16. Run a cop off the low water bridge over in Kentucky. And if it hadn't been for that damn radio, I'd have got away, you know. I got what I hope was my... last DUI in 1986, I got 8 convictions in the state of Kentucky for DUI. I think today you go to prison for that. But mine were so far in between, you know. And like I said, alcohol worked for a long time, and then I couldn't tell you when it stopped working, you know. I know there were periods when I'd get 30 days in jail for public intoxication or DUI or whatever. And I'd swear I wasn't going to drink. When I get out of here, I ain't going to drink. And sometimes I'd go a year without drinking, you know. That was a year was about it. I'd have them intervals in there. But then the dog would get hit by a car, and I'd start drinking. Or the dog didn't get hit by a car, you know, or there'd be a party, and I'd start drinking. And once I did, I was off and running, you know. I got married when I was 26, married this woman, and I was sober a couple of years before I realized this. She used to tell me I had to drop her off a block from her house because she didn't want her aunt to know that she was going out and stuff. Well, I was a couple of years sober, and I realized, hell, she was married. She didn't want her husband to know.
Oh, my God. You know? Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, I ended up marrying her, and we had a crazy marriage. You know, I mean, she liked to drink. I liked to drink. She liked to fight when she got drunk, you know, and I didn't mind fighting. You know, I kind of enjoyed it a little bit, you know, but I didn't like fighting with her. You know, but you know, we had some crazy times. You know, she used to tell people, she'd say, "I can tell when Carlos is going to get in a fight." And they said, "How?" Says, "His hand would go up to his mouth, and then it'd go to his pocket." And they said, "Why?" He said, "Because he's taking his dentures out." Smart there, girl. Anyway, you know, we had a crazy marriage. We got divorced, and I was off on my own for about a year, and then I had to go back to her. I found Bobby Mackey's. Any of you ever been over to Bobby Mackey's? They got that mechanical bull.
Sure did.
And I made a lot of money on that bull. And I spent a lot of money, too, there, you know. But, you know, it ain't real good on you when you're married, though. I'm emotionally challenged. I used to say retarded, and after a meeting one night, this woman come up and said she had a child that was challenged, and so I said, "I'm emotionally challenged." If you hurt my feelings, I got mad. I mean, I didn't go through, "Joe, you hurt my feelings." If you hurt my feelings, I hit you. You know what I mean? It was just like boom, boom, boom. When first inventory I did, my sponsor, I did a fist step with my sponsor, and he said, "You know, you never got mad in your life." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You just went into a rage." And I learned that, you know. Everything that I came in here with was learned behaviors. I found out from doing inventories in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I never got close to nobody. Because I'd get hurt if I did, you know. When I was a kid, my dad, that's not why I'm an alcoholic. But when I was a kid, my dad left, you know, the first girl I fell in love with, she didn't fall in love with me. So I'd always keep my distance. I wouldn't get close to nobody because I didn't want to get hurt. And I didn't know that, you know. But I do know I was the most miserable SOB I knew, or you knew, by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I'd go into a bar or a nightclub. These people would be over here laughing and everything. I'd think, what the hell are they laughing about? There ain't nothing can be that funny, you know? I'd sip my beer on the edge of the table so somebody would bump into it, knock it off, you know, so I could start a fight. And that thing with John Wayne, you know, it's okay if you're 6'4", walking in a bar when you're 5'6", 110 pounds, you know. I suffer from little man syndrome, too. I'm the guy that always picked a fight with the big guy in the bar, you know, the bigger he was. I used to say that's why, some of you knew my first sponsor, Denny Westfeld. I used to say that's why I picked Denny for my sponsor, you know, because he's the biggest, ugliest guy to meet him. That's the kind of guy to pick a fight with. But today, I know the reason I picked asked him to sponsor me was because he was always laughing and he was having a good time. Any of you knew me when I first came in, you know, I was miserable. You know, I was never happy. You know, I worked all the time. You know, I was thinking today, when I went down to my niece's funeral yesterday, then somebody said, "You look like you just walked out of Yellowstone." And I thought, "What the hell you mean, walked out of Yellowstone?" I thought they meant the park, you know. And they said, "No, the movie," you know, because I had on nice clothes and that, you know. But then I was thinking today, when I was working and drinking, I was a mechanic by trade. You know, God gave me the gift of knowing, if I know how something works, I can fix it, you know. Back then, the only clothes I had was my uniforms I wore to work. That's all I ever wore. You know, them uniforms and a pair of work shoes. when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I came up Oak Street one day. I had on my uniform, and this guy said, "Well, didn't you go home and change clothes before you got off work?" I said, "I drank in friggin' bars like this. I guess I can come to AA like this." Anyway, you know, this woman and I, we got divorced, and we were apart for about a year, and things got so bad for me, I needed somebody to take care of me, so I went back to her. It took me about a month to talk her into marrying me again. You know, so we got married again. What happened was, me and my brother was up at King's Island. He cleaned grease ducts for a living. Somebody quit on him, so I went up to help him, and we stole a half a keg of beer. We brought it back down, and I told her, "We got to have a party. We don't." She said, "Well, we can have a party without getting married." I said, "No, we got to have a reason to have a party. We got married again. Same justice as a piece of press the first time. I was drunk." He said, "Do you?" And I said, "I do." And I was thinking, "I don't want to, though." But we got married again, and it was a hell of a life. First time, our wedding reception was in an apartment. A fight broke out. I jumped in the middle of it. Cops come, took some people to jail, and I went to bed and passed out. Second time we got married was different. We had a house then. Fight broke out. Same justice of the peace, same words. I'm thinking the same thing. Get home, fight breaks out. I get in the middle of it. Cops come, some people go to jail. I went to bed and passed out. My sister gets on phone with Q102, and they're talking about it over the radio. In the winter of 1985, I wanted to move out in the country, and my wife and kids didn't want to. I had three stepkids. They didn't want to. And I said, "Well, I'm going." And so they went along and moved out in the country, and there really wasn't nothing to do out there but drink. You know, get off work, drive home, and drink. And in February 1986, my older sister, her husband was in the penitentiary for involuntary manslaughter. He had he'd been messing with this woman. My sister found out about it, and she walked into Kentucky Club, where we used to drink over there. And a girl was sitting there at the table, and my sister went over and got a Q-stick off the rack, come over and smacked her in the back of the head with it, and walked out. And she used to, if a fight broke out in there, she'd go behind the bar and get a ball peen hammer, go outside and stand outside the door, and if you come out the door, she'd hit you in the head with the hammer. So you had to stay in there, either take an ass whooping or give one, you know. But anyway, this... Evidently, my brother-in-law was still fooling around with this woman, and he hit her, and she had a brain aneurysm and died from it, and he got sent to the penitentiary. And, but my sister, she was still living in Covington. We moved out in the country, and, you know, she's always called me, come and see her, and I'm too busy. Well, she had to go in the hospital to have a hysterectomy. And she wanted me to come and see her, and I'm like, "I'll get down there as soon as I can," and that, you know. And I never made it down, and she called me after a couple of days, said she had an ulcerative rupture. So they went in and cleaned it up and said, "Well, you're not going to be able to eat spicy foods anymore or drink or anything, you know." And I said, "Damn," you said, "you might as well be dead." And the next night they called the hospital, called one of the family down there, and we got down there, my sister had died. They said it was an aneurysm, and I blame God for it. You know, he was getting even. That girl died from an aneurysm, my sister died from an aneurysm, so God was getting even. Now, I grew up Catholic and Baptist. That's a hell of a mix there. But I tell you, what they said and what I heard was probably different. Like Mike said, you know, everybody get a seat and stop your conversations and that. I heard him say, "Shut up!" So what I heard was probably different from what they were telling me. But anyway, I didn't have much use for God. She died in February 7th, 1986, and I stayed drunk for 6 months. You know, I was holding on to my job by a thread. I'd done everything that every moral I ever broke, ever had, I probably broke other than sleep with another man. And I told my sponsor that, and he said, "You ever have a blackout?" You know, that's another thing. When I got here, I was homophobic. You know, when I grew up, they'd say if somebody was gay, they'd say, "Stay away from them. They're queer. They'll touch you and shit." I'm scared to death of gay people. You know what I mean? Today, I have friends that are gay, and I don't even say that my gay friends are my friends. You know what I mean? Same thing with races. You know, I was a racist when I got here. You know, and today I'm not. You know, I don't know. I tell you, it's amazing. It's a miracle. You know, it's really amazing. I come out of a blackout one morning, standing in front of a breathalyzer machine. I looked at the state cop standing there. And I said, "I guess I'm under arrest." He said, "Yeah." I said, "DUI?" And he said, "Yeah, and a couple other charges." The jailer came out and said, "Mr. Hicks, you're back again." I said, "Give me a blanket, Tiny. I'll be out in the morning, you know." So I called my wife, told her, "Don't bail me out. I'll get out on no water bond, you know." And that's the thing, you know, it talks about in the book how the abnormal becomes normal. First time I went to jail was abnormal. Well, I've been to jail twice sober. So anyway, it was just normal, you know. Anyway, I got out of jail, and next morning they came and somebody came and got me from work, took me to get my car, and I went back to work, and my boss asked me what I was going to do. A buddy of mine had went into a care unit the year before that. And I didn't know right then what I was going to do, but I called my lawyer and he said, "Well, come out to my office tonight after you get off work and I'll find out what the other charges are in that." So anyway, I went out to his office and he said, DUI, possession of deadly weapon, possession of controlled substance, and something else. And I forget what the other one was. And he said, "You know, we're in a blackout, so we can't have a jury trial." He said, "You're probably going to the penitentiary for 11 years. And I worked the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't even know. At that very moment, I conceded to my innermost self that, you know, I couldn't stop drinking. You know, alcohol had me. The next day, I called that care unit because I knew I couldn't quit drinking. You know, I had three tall boys on the way out there. The lawyer says, "You've been drinking?" I said, "Well, I had a couple beers on the way out." But anyway, I went in this care unit, and they told me, you know, that I went in on August 20th. And my sobriety dates, I say it's the 23rd because they wouldn't, on the 23rd, they didn't give me no more Valium or anything, you know. But anyway, I go in there, and they told me I had to go to AA meetings. I said, "Well, that's fine for those people." I said, I've been to one. About a year before that, I went to one with my buddy in Delhi One, which is my home group today. And anyway, after the meeting, I stopped on the way, dropped him off, and stopped, got me a 12-pack, and went on home. My wife says, "You just went to an AA meeting." That was for Lenny, you know. But they said if I didn't go to the AA meetings, I had to leave the hospital. So, you know, I wanted to stay in there till I went to court, and the judge sentenced me, you know, because I knew I couldn't quit drinking. Anyway, I get in there, and I'm going to meetings, and I'm listening, and, you know, they're saying stupid shit. "You got to surrender to win. How you going to win if you surrender?" You know what I'm saying? I don't want to fight no more, Joe, you know, but I win. It's not a train to kill you. It's a engine. What the hell's that mean? You know what I mean? I was really, I guess, in a fog. Really, they had to explain it to me. You know what I mean? When the engine hits you, you're dead. It ain't the train coming up after you. Anyway, you know, I go to these meetings and I hear these people talking, and man, they think like I do. They talk like I do. They drank like I did. You know, maybe, just maybe, I'm an alcoholic. You know, they say get a sponsor, you know. I know what the hell a sponsor was. And I hear people in meetings say, get a sponsor. And I think about the poor new guy that's sitting there. You don't know what the hell a sponsor is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But anyway, I figured out what a sponsor was. You know, so I probably asked somebody, and they told me it's somebody to help you work, go through the steps that's going through it, and help you go through them. So anyway, you know, I picked this big guy, and he wasn't too smart. I didn't think at the moment, anyway. You know, he pretty happy. And I was miserable. And anyway, you know, we started working the steps. I had to sit down and did an inventory. You know, he showed me how to write out an inventory. Well, I worked the first two steps, and then the third step, you know, we went over that, and he said, are you willing to turn your life over to the care of God? He's an understanding. And I said, no. You know, because I was mad at God. And he said, well, will you turn it over to me? I said, what do you mean? He says, if you want to stay sober, you'll tell me what to do. You'll do what I tell you to do. I said, okay. And he got me right into an inventory. You know, I was like maybe 2 months sober. You know, I did that inventory at home after my wife and kids went to bed, you know. I read over it and then I tore it up. I got honest in that fourth column, you know. And I told him I got that inventory done. He said, well, we'll do a fifth step next week. We'll do a fifth step next week. I'm like, Jesus Christ, man, we got to get this done. So anyway, we finally did that fifth step. And he said, do you want to burn that? I said, no, I threw it in a trash can. He said, ain't you worried about somebody reading it? I said, it ain't got no power over me anymore, you know. But, you know, I went to court, and the judge tried me on a first-time DUI. The possession of a deadly weapon, the weapon disappeared in police custody. The possession of controlled substance was my wife's pills. I tore the label off of the bottle. And I don't even remember what the third charge was, but... I didn't have to go to jail. You know, before that, I was planning on going to penitentiary. I told my sponsor, I said, well, I got to go to prison. He said, they got AA in prison. But I had accepted the fact that that's where I was going. Anyway, I called him after we come out of the courtroom, and I paid my lawyer. I called him, and I said, I don't have to go to prison. He said, no, God's got something else in store for you. You know, and if I'd had to write down what God had in store for me, I'd have cheated myself. You know, I would have cheated myself out of a lot. I ended up getting divorced about a year later because she couldn't get sober and I couldn't live that way anymore. And, you know, it was pretty rough there for a while. You know, I'd sleep in my car. I'd go to the gas station, clean up before meetings, and I'd go to a Sunday morning breakfast meeting over there over at Holiday Inn in Covington. I don't even know if Holiday Inn's still there. Anyway, somebody'd say, where'd you stay last night? I'd say, my sister's. I'd pull in the driveway after Oak Street would close. You know, when I finally found Oak Street, it took me 6 months to find Oak Street. I don't know if any of you remember Bill Shannon or not, but Bill was my grand sponsor. He'd say, go to Oak Street. That's where you belong. Go to Oak Street. I can't find it. I can't find it. I'm lying about Oak Street. You know, I got behind a car, had a bumper sticker, said, I'm a friend of Bill's. I thought, I wonder if they're in AA. So I just followed them. They went to Oak Street. Standing on the porch, I'm looking in the door. This girl's in there laughing, you know. And I wish I had what she's got. This voice said, go on in. I was like, God, I turned around, this guy behind me. I spent a lot of time at Oak Street. A lot of time. Used to have that Friday midnight meeting. It was pretty awesome. Anyway, I was like 6 months sober, and I'm up at Oak Street, and this guy gives a lead, and he says, you know, you got to give it away if you want to keep it. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, how the hell are you going to give it away if you don't know if you got it? So the meeting was over. I went to the phone booth, which now is a jewelry store. I'm a sponsor, and I'm like, man, this guy says you got to give it away if you want to keep it. You know, how do you give it away if you ain't got it? He said, how long have you been sober? I said, 6 months. He said, well, you find somebody and show them how to stay sober 6 months. Well, I remember there was this guy that said it was his first meeting, Mike Hip, and he's gone now, died of cancer. But I went out and I found him. I said, you got a sponsor? He said, no. I said, you do now. I'm it. He said, I thought I got to pick a sponsor. I said, you do, you did, and I'm it. You got a big book? Bought him the big book, you know? And we started working steps. You know, and things just got different, you know? I mean, a lot of things. I ended up getting divorced again, like I said, because she couldn't get sober. She tried treatment, and it didn't work for her. Whatnot, and I had to go over a couple times and visit her boyfriends. She liked to fight. Well, these guys like to fight back, you know. But it was crazy there. But you know, I got to learn that. I got to do a lot of things. You know, I got to learn how to. I had to learn how to pray. You know. I developed a relationship with a different God. You know, I found out through inventories God didn't have anything to do with my sister dying. You know, and that. But, I got to learn how to date, how to go out with a woman and, you know, not go out and get drunk and wake up in a motel. Or, you know, I got to learn how to get to know somebody in that, you know. I went back to school and got my GED. Got to learn how to jump out of airplanes. That was a trip. Never rode in an airplane in my life, and I go up and jump out of it. What am I doing? You know, I did a lot of things. Ended up getting married again in Alcoholics Anonymous. We were just supposed to be dating, and she got pregnant. I did the right thing, and I married her. We got two beautiful boys out of it, but, you know... I'm emotionally challenged, and I was emotionally unavailable, you know, because I thought I got to work. Ended up buying the business that I worked for when the guy retired, and, you know, I bought a house, another house, and whatnot, and, then business started getting bad. She wanted a divorce, and I couldn't come to a meeting and sit and talk to a new guy and say, yeah, I've been sober 20 years. I'm getting divorced, about to lose my business. That sure the hell make a guy stick around with it. You see what I know? That was my alcoholism talking. Mm-hmm. You know, in 2002, my mom died because the doctor screwed up, and I wanted to go kill that doctor. And I talked about it in meetings. And nobody said you can't do that. You know, I mean, I didn't do over the years. I didn't do Alcoholics Anonymous. Right, at a year sober, I was going to shoot a guy. Had a gun on him, going to shoot him in the head for robbing my house. But I had to go do a damn AA meeting down at the old Newport jail. guy told me, he said, dude, I called this guy. Some of you probably remember him, but Danny Malone. And I said, told him I said, I got a bead right on his head. He said, well, why don't you go do the meeting and then come back and shoot him? I'm like, okay. Did the meeting on the cell range right there with a bunch of guys Joe knows. And I knew, you know, and they're like, my speaker didn't show up, so I'm talking about what's going on and that, and they're like, you got to shoot him. Everybody's gonna rob you. Today I know God works in my life. And he was working in my life that day. He was working through Danny. You know? Because I could have pulled that trigger and be sitting in the penitentiary right now. You know, but I did went and did that meeting. And on the way back, I got to thinking, you know. Shit, everything I learned in jail got me in jail. You know? So I got back. I went over. The guy lived right next door to me. I went over and told him I knew he robbed me. He said, oh, he says, I rob and steal. He said, but I never steal from a working man. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I would if I needed drugs or alcohol, you know. So if I catch you on my place again, I'll kill you. And I was a year sober, 9 years sober. I stabbed a guy. He smacked me in the back of the head to get my attention. He got it. it might have sounded better if I hadn't run him a block before I caught him, you know. But I remember that was on a Wednesday. I know that because the next day was a Thursday, and I walked into Delhi, and my sponsor said, I would smack you upside the head. And I said, not shoot your fat ass. you wouldn't have got nothing if you stabbed him back then. Anyway, I you know, I couldn't tell you where I started seeing God working in my life. You know, and everything started changing. You know, I started changing, you know. I started feeling different about things and seeing things different. And, you know, anyway, I ended up getting married again. His business is failing. The wife wants a divorce because she ain't getting the attention she wants, needs. So I quit going to meetings. You know, like I said, well, my disease tell me, what are you going to tell the new guy, you know? So I quit going to meetings. And I think it was like in October. By December, I had an 18-year-old girlfriend who had a heroin habit. She looked good, though, didn't she, Jeff? Anyway, I started carrying a gun again. Nah, it got crazy. I had a guy down in a parking lot with a gun in his ear, and I was ready to pull the trigger. And I mean, I was ready to pull the trigger. There wasn't no playing or nothing, you know. And I looked down, and he pissed his pants. That's the only thing that kept me from pulling that trigger, you know. I let him get up, and I took his wallet, and I got his name and address and that off his wallet. I couldn't tell you what it was now. Probably 5 minutes later, I didn't remember it, but he thought I remembered it. Shit got crazy. Got real crazy real fast. But I didn't drink or drug. You know, I got up every morning and I said my prayers, you know, and I asked God to help me stay sober, you know, and at night I thanked him. And it got pretty crazy, you know. I walked into my shop and I looked around and I said, there ain't no way I can get this shit done. I can't get these cars done. And I got in my truck and I drove out to my buddy's farm in Indiana. I drove all the way to the back of it, 160-acre farm. I drove to the back of it, you know. I got a 38 pistol. I'd stopped and got my blood pressure medicine refilled. I dumped all out of the bottle, got it refilled, you know. And I thought, well, I don't want to shoot myself because my kids have to have a closed casket. So I took him two bottles of pills in there, and I'm sitting there in my truck. There's a knock on the window. And I look around, and it was Dave Goodman. Some of you remember Dave. He said, what are you doing, brother? I said, I'm going to sleep. He said, okay. Next thing I know, I'm in and out. And the rescue team's there trying to revive me. They're like, what'd you take? I said, figure it out for yourself. Then all they do is reach under the seat and get the bottles out. And then one of them says, he's got a gun on him. Well, we can't touch him then until the sheriff gets here. Next thing I know, I wake up in the hospital. About a week before that, I told somebody I'd never been in a psych ward. I wake up in psych ward, you know. Shrink comes in and he says, well, you know, you're going through a divorce. worse, your business is failing, you haven't seen your kids in 3 months. He's telling me all this stuff, and he says, that's why you did it. And I said, no. He said, no. And I said, no. I said, I started playing God again. You know, there's what I know today is, two things I know for sure. There is a God, and I ain't it. Because my God is so big, there's no room for nobody else, you know? And they told me that when I first got sober. You know, I think it was Bill Shannon. He said, you want to stay sober, there's two things you need to know. I said, what's that? He said, there is a God, and you ain't it. I got out of that psych ward. You know, I went back to work. I got the business built back up. So had a girlfriend. And the actress wife didn't want nothing to do with me. But anyway, you know, I ended up getting divorced, and that girlfriend stole a bunch of guns from me. And, you know, when I found out, she told me, she says, you can't throw me out. I get mail here. She walked past me. I grabbed her by the hair, flung her over my shoulder, went to the front door, threw her out in the yard. I said, call the mailman. You know, the thing is, you know, some of the guns had sentimental value, but I hope to hell nobody gets killed with them. You know, because we all know what she did with them. But anyway, you know, I got back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I called guys that I'd been sponsoring and told them what was going on, and most of them said, no, I still want you to sponsor me. And, whatnot, and I got right back in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Before I talked to God a lot, but then I started listening to Him, you know, and I don't know how to explain it, but, you know, I know what He's talking to me, and, you know, if something's hard for me to do or to get or whatever, I ain't supposed to have it. It's that simple, you know. But I got back in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started doing the same things that I'd done for 20 years before that. You know, I try to shake every hand when I come to a meeting. If I haven't met anybody, somebody, I try to shake. Even if I've met them, I'm going to shake their hands, you know. I remember a guy at Delhi one night. He got up at the podium, and he said, I used to hate Carlos. He said, I'd tell this guy was a boxer. He said, I'd tell people, said, that damn Carlos comes up after the meeting talking about that big book again, I'm going to knock him out. You know? And he said, and there come Carlos after the meeting. You know, another guy said, he'd come in, he was in Prospect House at the time, said he'd come in, he'd sit old by himself, and I'd see Carlos coming in the door, and I'd say, oh, shit, he's going to come over here and shake my hand again. And I would, Gil, you know, Gil? You know, he's still sober today. The other guy's still sober today, you know. I don't know. I'm not miserable anymore. I'm happy most of the time, you know, and I can smile. You know, this is God's truth. I thought, after I sober a while and do it Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought I was having some kind of nerve thing in my face. Because I hadn't smiled in so long, when I'd start smiling, it'd feel funny. You know, I went to my sponsor and told him, you know? You know, it's like, I don't know, I guess I was just that dumb, or whatever. And today, you know, I got two brothers that live with me. One of them will be sober, Christmas Day he'll be sober 3 years, and I thought that if you guys ever met him, it would be at his funeral. Because that's a thing, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. When something happens to some of our family, which we are family, we show up at for the services or whatever, you know. My other brother, he fell, it'll be 2 years in March. He was drunk, fell and fractured his skull in 4 places. His left side, he can't use his left side in that. We didn't think he was going to make it, and then he was in this place for months before rehab and stuff, and then down at the VA and whatnot, and he come live in my house after he got out there, and until the VA found him an apartment. When they found him an apartment, we went down, looked at it, and he said, yeah, I'll take it. On the way back, he says, you know, I think if I get down there, I'll start drinking again. My little brother says, well, how are you going to get it? You can't even walk. He says, I'd call a cab, an Uber, somebody. I said, what do you want to do? He said, I'd just rather stay there. So now I got two brothers living with me. That sucks sometimes. But I got a cabin down in the mountains. You know, God bless me with that. You know, I looked at four or five places, and something was all kept going wrong. And see, that's how I know God was working in my life. First place I looked at, the guy's deed wasn't no good. Second place I looked at, the guy thought he had 144 acres and he only had 17 acres. Deed said 144. But down there, deeds get burned a lot, there's fires, and that, you know. But anyway, I bought this piece of land down there and built a cabin on it. And I get to get away and get down there sometimes. Back in August, I got to go up in Canada bear hunting. It's my fourth or fifth year. Let's see, I got four bears, so it was my fourth year. Spent last winter in Florida with my buddy John Hay. You know, got to go out deep sea fishing. Life's just good, you know. I think I spoke at the outfit farm last Christmas. I think it was last Christmas. My friend Christine chaired the meeting, had me speak. You know, we lost Christine back in July. Those were the things that I didn't want to go through, you know, losing people, you know. It sucks, you know, but it's part of life. This arm here, everybody on here except Merle Haggard passed because of drugs. You know, I don't know how many of you remember Tyler. Tyler was 13 when I started sponsoring. You know, he was 23 when he overdosed, you know. Everybody, most of them on here, well, I guess all of them on here got sober and went back out, you know. I'll tell this and then I'll shut up. This was for my friend Elsa. I met her in a grocery store. Just started talking to her. She worked in a grocery store. And then she come over to the house and we'd sit there and watch TV. She'd sit there and watch cartoons. I called them cartoons. She called them animation. But she'd come over to eat and stuff, you know. And we were friends, you know. We were really close friends. And her mom died, and she relapsed. And after her mom's funeral, she said she wanted to go to Cat House, so I took her down and got her in Cat House. And that Friday come, I called down there to check on her, and they said, she's not here. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, she left. And so the next day was Saturday, so I didn't go over to her house. So I went over Sunday. People were carrying stuff out of her house. I pulled my truck up in the yard, and I said, what the hell's going on? This girl said, well, Elsa said if anything happened to her, we could have her stuff. I said, what do you mean? If anything happened, said, yeah, she OD'd last night and died. And I must have went into shock. The next thing I know, I'm sitting down at Cat House in the parking lot. You know? And, I went in and talked to some people, and one girl said, yeah, said she wanted to leave last night, said she wanted to get high one more time. You know, and that was it. And I was sitting at home. I mean, it hurt me. It hurt me as much as anything, you know, because I love my first wife. She died 2 years before that of cancer. You know, we'd been divorced for I don't know how many years, but when I went to the hospital to see her, I knew that, you know, that I loved her, and that if she'd have been able to get sober, we'd have stayed married. But I think Elsa was the woman that, what do they call, a soulmate, you know what I mean? Anyway, I was sitting home a couple of days after she passed, and I picked up a notebook and pad of paper, and I started writing, and I'm not a poet, but what I wrote down was, I waited for your call today to say that they were wrong. I waited for your call to say you weren't gone. The day it came and then it went, the call it never came. I sat and cried and prayed for you. I prayed in Jesus' name and asked for him to take my Elsa home, because by now I realize that she's really gone. When I feel sad and all alone, I hear my Elsa say, "Don't be sad, my dearest friend, I'll see you here someday." And she wasn't sure about God. She was from Sweden. Oh, shit. I screwed up. I'd have got a dirty look from her, and she was from Switzerland. I used to tell her she was my Swiss sex therapist. I said, I like that. Anyway, I don't know. I have feelings. I'm not as emotionally retarded as I used to be, or emotionally challenged. If you do something that hurts my feelings, then I can think about it. Why am I getting upset? Well, because Joey hurt my feelings. Why in the hell do I let what Joey does bother me? I like Joey. He's my friend. I care about him. I can play that stuff on out. I like doing things for people. I like making people feel good. I was walking out of a thrift store one day, and this lady was walking in, an older lady, and she had this hat on with all these feathers and stuff on it. I said, "That's the prettiest hat I've seen all day." And she just smiled, and she said, "Well, thank you." We stood there 10 minutes talking about her hat. I'll be in a store, and I'll see somebody, a woman that's not, and this is, I'm honest, this is from my heart, a woman that's not really beautiful and sexy, I'll see them in the store. And I'll comment on something she's wearing or something, and I'm not trying to pick her up, But to watch her face change, and feel good. It's like my hat. Where's my hat? My hat's over there. I was down where my cabin is a couple months ago. I went to the sheriff's office to pay the taxes, and that sheriff says, "I like your hat." And I said, "Oh, thanks. Here, you can have it." He said, "Well, I don't want your hat." I said, "You didn't like it that much, did you?" But you know what? It's only a hat. If you like the hat, you can have it. I like doing things for other people, trying to help them out or whatever, If you ain't got nowhere to go on Christmas Day, my house is open. We've got plenty of food. And if we eat it all, we'll cook some more. I'll sneak over to Joe's house and get some meat. It's a good life today, I think I'm a better person than I was when I first walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, And that reason is, I've got a God of my understanding today that I hope he works through me. Just do something nice for somebody, Don't ever think, I can't afford to do something for somebody. Just saying something nice to them, Giving them a ride to a meeting, And that's my thing, Mike didn't ask me to speak, when I got the call the other day and all the stuff was going on with my niece and everything, he said, "Well, I was going to ask you to speak in a meeting, but since you got all this going on." And I said, "No, I said, you just tell me when and where, and I'll be there, because there ain't nothing I love more than talking about my God, Alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Today, God does for me what I can't do for myself. And that's the thing, I can go anywhere, I can do anything, And I've been Alcoholics Anonymous all over the United States and Canada. And I have never walked into a meeting that I wasn't welcomed and I fit right in. This is the only place I've ever fit in. Hell, I got kicked out of Boy Scouts. I've been kicked out of churches and You know what I mean? But, I don't know, I'm, glad to be here. I hope you all have a Merry Christmas. If there's anything I can do, I'm on Facebook. You know, if you ain't, you can't look in the phone book, get my phone number, you know. But, thanks for chairing, Mike.